It's time to dive into the latest news and updates from the Vegas Golden Knights. This is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
On the radio and broadcast across the Vegas Golden Knights social media channels, Darren Millard, Brian McCormick on Nighttime at Noon. We have an announcement to make right off the bat. The Vegas Golden Knights, first overall in the National Hockey League points percentage and in overall points. So you can't even have people phone up and go, hey, points, they're second. Because we were talking about points percentage before, the best record in the National Hockey League, but they didn't have the most points. Now it's solid, locked in. The Vegas Golden Knights lead the National Hockey League with 57 points, the only team in the National Hockey League that remains with a single digit in the regulation loss column. Well, welcome into the program. Good way to start.
Good way to start 2025 for the Golden Knights with a win over the Buffalo Sabres. And as you mentioned, first in points percentage, and really over the last couple of weeks, just in all-out wagon mode.
Right now, they're 17-4 at home, 10-5-3 on the road, and 8-2 in their last 10 after winning both games to start 2025. There's a whole lot that we can dissect, and we will do so. Bruce Cassidy, just off the ice at the end of practice, he's getting his skates taken off. He's going to get ready for his media availability, and we'll bring you that live in just a little bit. We'll also get into what's been going right for the Vegas Golden Knights, and we will dive into the World Junior Hockey Championship.
There's a lot to cover. This is one of my favorite two-week stretches of the year, and it's not just because of Christmas and New Year's. And it feels like a time when hockey's at center stage, and that comes with NHL, but also with the World Juniors, which is just so much fun. Team USA getting its second consecutive gold medal last night in overtime fashion. There were three VGK prospects part of that tournament over the last 2 weeks. So, yeah, a lot of fun to talk about. But, again, as you said, for the VGK, you know, how far back do you want to go when you're tabulating the success? They've won 12 of their last 14. They have not lost back-to-back games since before Thanksgiving. And they're heading into a week now where, of course, you got to win the games on your schedule. But a week with a game in San Jose tomorrow that they've already beaten San Jose twice this season, scored 6-plus goals in both, and then facing an Islander team and a Ranger team that are not exactly firing on all cylinders right now. So an opportunity to really start January right.
It's a four-game week for the Vegas Golden Knights, which will wrap up with a home date against the Minnesota Wild on Sunday. The Golden Knights quarter-century team will be unveiled that day. So we're looking forward to the names that will be on the first and the second teams for the Vegas Golden Knights in the first 7.5 years of the franchise's existence. Let's look more recently and the 3-1 win over the Buffalo Sabres. And it was a game in which you saw more complete effort by Vegas than you did the game prior, in which they responded after the first period against Philadelphia.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, just so much of the offense for the Golden Knights, it's been this way all season, but we talk so much about depth. You have Jack Eichel having a season that's going to put him in the MVP conversation at the end of the season if he continues at the trajectory that he's going on. But the depth scoring that they've gotten from Brett Howden, from Keegan Kolesar, and now on how they get things started against Buffalo the other night, it was with Tanner Lozinski up from the Silver Knights, gets his first VGK goal, and just so much of what they develop is just funneling everything towards the net. And, you know, that's one of the things is I look back at you know, highlights of the last couple of games, the ones I wasn't able to watch the entirety of, but everything that the Golden Knights do offensively is downhill. Everything that they do is forcing you to defend in high-leverage areas of the ice. And when you watch the Sabre game, it's volume on net, but it's just so much traffic. It's so much off the rush. It's so much under duress for Buffalo defensively. And that's just, as you mentioned, trying to respond from a slow start to Philadelphia, a rough finish to Montreal before the new year, it was getting everyone recalibrated again into attack mode.
The Flyers fell to the Golden Knights 5-2. It was the 3-1 game against the Buffalo Sabres, and that was a game, you mentioned Lozinski scores, Mark Stone with his 10th and 600th National Hockey League point, and Jack Eichel scores his 11th. Eichel and Stone are nicely into double digits, but they're not having to carry the weight from the goal-scoring department.
Yeah.
They are, though, their best players, and they do have that ability just to take over a game.
That's probably why, you know, again, why are the Golden Knights so efficiently at the top of the league right now? As it looks like Bruce Cassidy's ready to begin, should we send over to Bruce Cassidy now? We'll continue our talk in a moment. Let's hear what Coach has to say.
Back out there. Yeah, good to see him. New red jersey. Very bright. Can't miss him. Yeah, I'm sure he's more excited than anybody, to be honest. No one likes being away from their teammates, especially when things are going well. So good to have him out there.
You think he plays tomorrow, or do you think that's still a little ways out?
Oh, he won't play tomorrow, no. No, not ready yet. Obviously, once he gets with us in a normal color jersey, then probably have a much better timeline, but not tomorrow, but obviously getting there.
Barbashev any close, or?
He skated on his own, I know for sure, yesterday. Again, he's not in a red with us. You know what I mean? Like, at least in with us, so that he's probably further along. That'd be my guess, but that could change, unfortunately.
The power play, one of the things that's been kind of seemingly heading in the wrong direction is entries. Is there something you're noticing that's not going right there?
Well, usually entries, it's about execution, right? Because everyone's running some sort of delay, whether it's two guys coming back, three or one. But it's making that play when you get between the red and the blue and have enough pace, and that's where we haven't been as clean. So that's a problem because it's not easy to just sit on one entry because a lot of teams use a delay and they have three or four options, right? So you got to choose the right one in real time. So for me, that's a bit of our problem is our first pass, once we get over the red line, not as clean to allow the guy receiving it to drive the puck deep and then find one of the options. So we got to clean that up. And then a little more pace on the entry to back teams off could be better. But that's everywhere. That's in the ozone as well. And I feel, honestly, that what we're not doing is starting with a puck nearly as much as we did at the start of the year. For whatever, we're not getting it back as a group of five. If we lose the draw, we're not winning as many. And to be honest, Tom's getting thrown out a lot of draws. So I'd like to get to the bottom of that with the linesman, what's going on, because it seems like he's getting thrown out a disproportionate amount of time just on power play situations.
Is that something that you can call the league and go over them, or how does that work?
I don't know. They're going to tell you, well, there's whatever, 40 linesmen, so you know what I mean, you're a different one every night. Is it, you sure it's not your player because it's a different line, you know, it's not a single. So we have to sit down with Thomas, have him maybe for a while here, just be a little more patient. But you know, if you're not trying to anticipate in a draw, your chances of winning it decrease.
First, you mentioned there's a lot of linesmen. Oh, sorry.
Grab a mic there, Ghost.
Okay,
please.
How you doing? I'm Dave. It's a lot of linesmen, a lot of referees. You have your own internal book on them.
And I thought you were going to ask favorite. And I was going to say no. I do not, Dave.
But just on how they work games.
Yes, linesmen. There are some that wave off icings that are head scratchers to people on both teams. So you know that there's going to be a couple each. Don't ever give up on a puck because they're going to find a way to sort of anticipate the roll of the puck down the ice. So there, I know there's a few guys that usually those are the guys that want to be a little more involved. They'll also be the guys, if you're in a line change, they'll be the ones calling the two-minute men on the ice that are really close. Now, we're pretty good with that, I'd say. We don't get caught a lot, but so yes. And then the officials, I think there's some that call a tighter game than others. That's just human nature. I think most of our games are, there's not a lot of high event, but a lot of high power play penalty kills on each side. It doesn't happen that often, so... But yes, there are a few too that are more likely to put a team down 5-on-3 than others, you know, and you kind of get to know them as well. So, but I don't think that it'll never change our approach, how we're going to play on a power play for feeling, you know, or kill a penalty that shouldn't. You're out there trying to do the job. You're not worried about what's going through an official's head. So to be quite honest, I'm less surprised. I'll go into a game and I'll think tonight could be the night we get a 5-on-3 or have to kill one, I guess, with some of those officials. So maybe dialed into that part of the meeting that you don't get that many of them, so you're not always going through every situation. But that's one that I'll tell the coaches, be on top, make sure you take a look at what they're doing, because you know I remember getting a few for and against with this particular gentleman.
You know, Bruce, when you mentioned kind of the entries when it comes to the power play, but when you do have the puck in zone, are you seeing more looks that you're hoping to see of late, or does it still feel maybe stagnant like you said a couple of weeks ago?
I think our pace needs to be better because they're taking away one of the things we worked on early in the year was the goal line into the bumper or low seam. Teams have crowded that area more.
haven't been as efficient with the shot when we get it there, right? You know, when you got half a second to get it off, and it has to be on net and has to be somewhere, hopefully, where the goalie can't control the rebound if it doesn't go in. So we've got to be better on that. We've misfired on a few. And then I think, okay, you say, okay, if they're going to take that away, then there has to be something open up high or on the elbow. And that's where I think we've got to be more direct in terms of knowing that this is going to be there, take the shot from there. And then hit the net from up top. That's part of it too. I thought what Buffalo did the other day, they're fronting the elbows in the top, and we're always shooting through somebody, and that means we're not moving the puck well enough or moving a little bit to create a shooting lane against the Diamonds, which a lot of teams are doing. So that was a problem for us. We need to move more. The puck has to move faster. Pace. I know it sounds like the token answer, but it's typically what bogs power plays down. The best ones are a little bit unpredictable because the puck's moving very quickly or people are moving. So you're kind of going through multiple reads as a killer. And we've got to get our pace back up, whether we're moving our feet. I don't think we need to change move Jack over to, you know what I mean? There's always those things you think about. Oh, maybe Jack on the other side, coming downhill. I don't know if we're there yet where we need to do that. I think if we are quicker with our puck movement and more accurate with the shot we do take, I think we'll see results get back to where they were. So that's going to be our area of focus here in the next amount of time. And if we have to blow it up and change our plan, we will. I don't think we're there.
I know it's probably easier to say you want to take the third period from San Jose and translate it over right away tomorrow night, but do you go into tomorrow putting a little bit more eyes on that, on their young line, and try and take away their time and space and let them?
Well, we'll talk about them. I mean, they were a factor in the game. They impacted the game. And Celebrini's done it now for a while. This isn't by accident. We're halfway through the year. So, you know, Smith's coming along a little bit, so they're getting probably a feel for the league, what they can get away with, what they can't, et cetera. I don't know which goaltender we'll see. That Askarov's playing very well for them. I don't know how much they're going to run them out there. But I think the last game was a little bit situational too, Danny. We got two shorthanded goals right out of the gate, so it was one of those things that probably only happen on the same shift once a year at best. So I don't think it's more about the attack mindset if we had going into that period. Hey, we gotta get going here. We've dug ourselves a bit of a hole in the second period, so let's get going from the start, which I thought was good against Buffalo. If we can transpose that start into San Jose, we're on our toes and we're attacking and not giving up a lot and putting teams on their heels. And I think that then that would be a nice approach tomorrow. Thank you.
There's Vegas Golden Knights head coach Bruce Cassidy and his media availability between the win over Buffalo and the game tomorrow against San Jose Sharks. You got some stuff written down, I know. We'll get back into that as we continue because we were behind in a break due to the head coach, so I can blame him because we're over time. Can't get enough hockey? Well, you're in luck as the Henderson Silver Knights continue their homestand following a 4-1 victory over Bakersfield yesterday. Silver Knights will host the Ontario Reign 7 o'clock this Wednesday at Lee's Family Forum. Make sure to head over to hendersonsilverknights.com to get your tickets today. Reaction to Bruce Cassidy's availability. Plus, we dive into the Vegas Golden Knights performance in 2025 as we continue in Nighttime at Noon.
We're back to Nighttime at Noon on your home for the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Wherever you're checking in tonight, whether it's Cleveland, Ohio, or you're in Florida, we hope you're enjoying a Nighttime at Noon. Watch your Vegas Golden Knights this season with Nighttime Plus. Download Nighttime Plus today for on your smartphone, your tablet, your computer, or to watch Golden Knights games. Nighttime Plus delivers all locally televised games on Scripps Sports, as well as bonus content created throughout the season. Download and subscribe now to tune in all season long. Bruce Cassidy just met with the media. If you didn't catch that, we'll replay some of it tonight on Fox Sports Las Vegas with the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. He started by referring to the player in the red jersey. That was Nick Waugh, who was back on the ice in practice with the full group today.
And they asked how close he is. He says, well, we'll get him in a normal jersey skating with us. That'll be a better time to get a guesstimate of when he might be ready for game action again. And then the same question asked about Ivan Barbashev also skating, but not with the larger group. And as Bruce Cassidy said, that puts him a little further back than Nick Waugh. But both moving along, but Nick Waugh won't be an option for tomorrow night, as you'd expect.
And without those two players, they've had to move some of the personnel around on the forward lines. And then, unfortunately, Victor Olofsson was under the weather the other day, and he wasn't able to play his former team. First time he was ever going to play a former team. He'd never been through it before. And that went by the wayside. Hopefully he can catch the game back in Buffalo. So they've had to get by with some different-looking formations, which included Tanner Lisinski coming up. And Tanner played five games earlier, went back to Henderson. The second call-up is on the score sheet for his first goal with Vegas, his third National Hockey League goal, and it wasn't exactly a fluke. Like Tanner was very present the other night.
Well, it was almost a jailbreak to the front of the net because not only does he get to the front of the net, but Brett Howden got to the front of the net, too. They both won the race to the front of the net. So Howden gets a piece of it, and then Lisinski finishes. But, you know, that's, I was mentioned a little bit in our first segment. For the Golden Knights, they're a team that wants to attack from the middle. And you'll see some teams, they'll carry the puck into the zone. They'll turn to the outside. They'll be content to stay outside the dots and work down low. They'll take what's given to them. The Golden Knights force you to play in the middle. And whether that's a center lane drive that's pushing everyone back and opens up that second wave. Well,
that's where the offense from the blue line has come. And those guys jumping into the plate. Not exactly leading the rush, but just taking that space that's available because there's so much pressure moving
it
forward.
It forces everyone back. And that's where that second wave, whether it's Pietrangelo able to jump in, Hanifin able to jump in, even, honestly, the third forward entering the zone able to get a look every now and then. But that's something that I think speaks to the depth scoring that they're getting. Everyone's getting that opportunity from the middle ice on middle lane drives. They're not content to have a 40-second shift grinding below the goal line, wearing the other team down, saying, okay, that's a good shift. No. Brett Howden's winning battles in the corner, getting to the middle, making plays to the middle. And then when you do have opportunities, like you said, Jack Eichel and Mark Stone are having the kind of season, they're not being forced to carry the team, but a team that was having less offensive depth they probably could be carrying, you'll still have Jack Eichel, okay, he'll be able to thread a pass through five sticks to Mark Stone in the blue paint. Those players can do that. The third and fourth lines don't have to do that. Instead, they're playing physical, they're driving to the middle, and they're creating havoc from 5 feet out from the goal line.
I like the way Lisinski's able to step in and center a third line at the National Hockey League level the way he was the other night.
And what's impressive is, again, Lisinski scores against Buffalo. He was in the Silver Knight lineup last night, and he had two assists for Henderson, which is to say, he's a player that has maturity. He's been in the NHL before with Philadelphia. He's been in the AHL for 5 years now. This is a guy who can jump into a locker room and contribute, go across town, jump into the next locker room and contribute, and then come back again if he needs to. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised from the Silver Knight contingency. We've seen Cal Burke this season. We've seen Mason Morelli this season. We see Jonas Rompe. There's been a lot of guys who have gotten to turn through the lineup. And Tanner Lisinski, we might have seen more of him by this point if he wasn't injured for all of November. But he's getting his chance over the last couple of weeks, and he's being an effective player. And as you mentioned, he's not a fourth-line plug-in. They can elevate him even higher up the lineup than that.
Six games with the Vegas Golden Knights this year. That's the second most in a single season in the National Hockey League that he's played. He got a bunch a couple of years ago with Philadelphia. But
32,
but now he's into a pretty good run with the Vegas Golden Knights. On the idea of making things work with different combinations, Tanner Pearson was on the fourth line at the start of the year and was really going good there with Nick Waugh and Keegan Kolesar. And he's bounced around a little bit in the middle of the lineup. He was with Jack Eichel and Mark Stone the last game and a half, which shows you the range that Tanner Pearson has. But also, boy, as a guy that came to camp on a professional tryout, to have that kind of versatility, to be fourth line and be very competent in that role and what's expected of you with less ice time, and then go up and play 16 minutes plus on the first line with elite players. Not many guys can do that.
No, and what a find, right, in the training camp window to bring in a player. And I'm going to be paraphrasing a little bit, but just recalling what Bruce Cassidy was saying about Tanner Pearson at the time. You're bringing him in and hoping not that he can crack your lineup or be your 13th forward, be one of those peripheral guys. If you're going to bring him in, it's because you think you can tap in to what he was at his best a few years ago, which is to say he's a guy who was banged up the last couple of years, slowed him down a little bit. But this is a guy who was a top six contributor type when he was part of the That 70s line in LA. And no one is who they were 9 years ago, but this is a player, you're not just bringing him in to fill minutes. If we're going to bring him in, it's because we think we have a system and we have a culture that can bring out some of those offensive gifts, those offensive talents that he had a few years back, kind of reignite that part of him. And A, they've done that. And B, the last couple of games, couple of empty net goals for Tanner Pearson as well, they're trusting him late in games to close out games too. So he's been an all-situation guy.
I think the questions about Pearson at the start of the year were valid.
Sure.
He's been banged up. He's suffered some significant ailments that have knocked him off kilter. He's had some surgeries. Mm-hmm. And nobody really knew what to expect. This is across the National Hockey League. He came here without a contract.
That's why he's available in that situation.
So that was valid. Now, you hope that the player is able to come through with what the player and the agent have said. No, he's good. He's going to be fine. You're going to be impressed with him. And that's exactly what happened. He played a ton during the preseason. They took a really good look at him. They liked him. But then to be able to follow through on that, he's got 8 goals so far. He's pushing a 16-goal pace. Might get higher than that if he continues to work his way into a third or a second-line situation. When Barbashev comes back, Barbashev will be on the first line. When Olofsson comes back, Olofsson practiced today. That's good news, feeling better. He'll be back with Eichel and Stone. But there's a 20-goal potential there for a player that you were able to evaluate in camp and didn't have any commitment to.
And he has a skill set that, again, if he's not a first liner for 80 games, we only need you to be a first liner for 20 games in different scenarios throughout the season. Very good plug-and-play skill set to be able to play with skilled players and provide that kind of finish and be able to be a little bit of muscle in that on a top line. But, you know, to your point, every now and then we've seen players come in on tryout basis in training camp with different teams, and you know they'll muster up what they have to get through training camp and to put on a really good show and to make the team, but that's a lot of energy to make the roster. And then when the rubber hits the road for the regular season, maybe a little bit of regression to the mean, maybe it'll wane a little bit, or maybe you just don't have that fire and desperation of trying to make a team. To your point, Pearson's just gotten better. He won a job. He was put through a really strenuous audition in the preseason. He won a job, and since then, he has demonstrated and had a willingness to embrace a role in Bruce Cassidy's system, but he's not just doing the bare minimum to fill that role. He's been able to augment his game, meet the moments, and again, for a team that a lot of people are playing above expectations. You know, Mark Stone, Jack Eichel are doing the things that you want, but Brett Howden and Keegan Kolasar are other players that are having career seasons. So, you know, that rising tide lifts all boats. And Tanner Pearson is staying up with the same adrenaline that everybody else is through the first third of the season.
So Eichel's on pace for a career year, 100-point season. Mark Stone is tracking a 100-point season, despite missing all those games. They're getting production from their stars.
Yep.
But the best competition on this team right now is for best bargain performance. Victor Olofsson, just over $1 million. Tanner Pearson came here without a contract. Brett Howden, unbelievable performance on his contract. Earns an extension through it. Keegan Kolasar, same thing. They're getting some great value performances along with the stars.
You could probably throw Pavel Dorofeev in that conversation too. He's a guy who's progressing on time and on schedule, but probably took 2 steps so far this year with the finishing ability he's had and the areas of his game that they wanted him to grow up until this point. He's grown those areas of the game without losing the flair, without losing the release that made him special in the first place. And that's what's great about a young player is when you're asked to grow certain areas of your game, but you don't sacrifice the things that you did well in the first place. You don't become safe. You don't become conservative in other areas of the game. Pavel Dorofeev has gotten smarter defensively, but he's also a tougher player to play on the inside. He's more of a net front battler than he was in his first couple of years pro. So, like you said, lots of players that, you know, as Kelly McCrimmon says in the offseason sometimes, players, you know, if you're going to win hockey games, you're going to need certain players overperforming their contract. There's a lot of guys that fit that description right now, and Pavel Dorofeev as a young guy, I think fits into that conversation as well.
National Hockey League leading Vegas Golden Knights play tomorrow night against the San Jose Sharks. Jack Eichel is pushing top 10 in points. He's top 5 in assists. He's number 1 in plus minus at plus 25. He, by the end of this year, could have his career plus minus leveled out.
Yeah, and that's where he's if you look at where he is in the scoring race right now, again, I've heard Gary Lawless a couple of times this season talking about what Jack Eichel's going to look like at season's end as an MVP candidate. Mm-hmm. Certainly the points are going to be part of that conversation, but there's a lot of guys who are going to put up a lot of points. It's his 200-foot game, what he does in all areas, what he does in all special teams functions of the game, that's also going to factor into that conversation. Right now he's probably, you make an argument, he's among the top 3 most complete centermen in the game.
Plus 25. You know who's number 2? Braden McNabb. At plus 24. Like, top 2 guys in plus minus. They don't play in the same line. I can see top 2 guys if they're in the same line and they're running mates. But you've got a defenseman, and Braden McNabb's not Cale Makar putting up points. That is almost more impressive than what we're looking at with Jack Eichel, which is mind-blowing. Good stuff. When we continue, we'll get back into the World Junior Championship. We touched on that for a little bit, and we'll deal with what's ahead for the Vegas Golden Knights with the game against San Jose. It's nighttime at noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas, as well as the Vegas Golden Knights social media channels.
Live from City National Arena, this is Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Darren Millard along with Brian McCormick in Studio 31, getting through the Vegas Golden Knights' recent surge right to the top of the National Hockey League standings, leading it in points and points percentage as they get set to play a rare road game there in San Jose tomorrow night. That is a 7:30 start, so look for that at 7:30 on Fox Sports Las Vegas. The pregame show will start at 6:30, and the pregame show on Scripps Sports will be at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Those 7:30s kind of throw everything out of kilter.
Out of rhythm, yeah. 7:30s do that. 6:30s do that. You don't realize how in the AHL we have a handful of 6:30 starts in different places, and that 30 minutes, you don't realize how much you miss it. When Justin Russo is wrapping up his pregame show and you realize you're still jotting down notes for the next 3 hours ahead. So make the most of those 30 minutes. An extra 30 minutes I could use on a lot of occasions. It just makes me fall asleep towards the end of the third period.
Bruce Cassidy spoke earlier about the power play and what he would like to see from the Matt Advantage unit. Just more movement, not getting as static. And there's movement skating, and then there's moving the puck around. And it's easy to get a little static when it comes to that.
What I love, every Bruce Cassidy press conference, he answers the questions, but he doesn't – it's not get pucks in deep and stick to our systems answers. He's going to give you what he's actually thinking about. And
it's a coach's clinic.
It usually brings up something that you never thought about. And one of the things that he brought up in that I was fascinated by was, honestly, Tomas Hurl's getting thrown out of the circle more than we want. Mm-hmm. And how the, obviously, you have multiple people out there for a power play who can take a draw, but what you want to do, what you're designed to do, is off of each person in their spot off the draw, getting possession of the puck, and then setting up what you want to set up. And it just brings, I've had this conversation with a lot of guys before. There's obviously a rubric that a linesman is following in the faceoff, at the faceoff dot, of what a false start on the draw is and whatnot. I believe one time I heard someone say Ricky Henderson never took a strike that he believed that he agreed with. Mm. I think 95% of the time centers are thrown out of the draw, they have no idea why they're thrown out of the draw. And it sounded like,
well, you don't have time to argue.
No,
because they're going to drop the puck if you're not ready.
It feels arbitrary sometimes.
If you're not in that dot, somebody's not in that dot ready to go, they'll just drop it. They've got that authority.
Right. And to that point, again, centermen go in, they know what the rules are. Mm-hmm. But even sometimes I'll watch a face-off that the center's thrown out 5 times. Like, I honestly don't know who's at fault there. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up is that Bruce Cassidy was also saying, Tomas keeps getting thrown out of the face-off dots. I'd like to have a conversation with a couple of people to find out why that keeps happening.
But there's not really an avenue for that to happen by nobody's fault.
It has to be an email chain after the fact, right?
You want to talk to the head of officiating, Stephen Wacom. He will say that there's 40 different linesmen, so it's obviously something that your player is doing wrong because it's not the same official every time that's following this path. So you're left with, okay, it must be something we're doing. So are we less aggressive going forward? Well, then the faceoff numbers fall off.
Right.
You might as well be more aggressive, get tossed out, and take a chance at it. Then,
but the onus on the linesman to throw you out.
Yeah. And then just be passive in making the draw. I didn't realize that, and shame on me, but Bruce talked about having a book on officials, the referees.
Sure.
Which we, I think most of us have an idea of what the traits are of referee A, B, and G. But linesmen, I didn't realize that there is like some trends that go with the guys that are dropping the pucks and waving off sides.
Well, and you'll have to ask next time you get a chance, you should ask Bruce about that, because if you're thinking about a book on linesmen, aside from the puck drop, what else could that book really be on? It's the puck
icings?
Icings, sure, and then I guess how much leeway are they going to give you on a line change for too many men? Mm. Other than those couple of things, most of the linesmen decisions are fairly cut and dry. So, yeah, I suppose, yeah, the
offside,
the range in which they're going to wait. But even with the offside, you're onside or you're not. There's a review
exactly.
for that.
I don't think anybody's got – he calls more plays offside
right.
than the other guy. I don't think that's an issue. I think it's the too many men being too aggressive on a change.
Yeah.
There's some guys – there's probably four or five linesmen that – end up calling more too many men on the ice mm-hmm. penalties than their brethren. And then icings, where they will they're more apt to wave off a close icing.
And even that, though, the onus is still on you. It's a foot race to the whistle. Mm-hmm. If you don't let up, it's no problem. Now, you might want to work on one line some more. They're like, hey, Why are you waving these off, or why are you waiting so long to blow it dead? Fair enough, but the players on the ice, if you're skating to the whistle, it still shouldn't necessarily impact you that much. But to me, yes, behavior at the face-off dot and the stringent nature of line changes are the two that I would think would be the greatest highlights if you're going to have a book on somebody.
I have a book on Jesper Wijkman. Can score.
Big addition yesterday, yeah.
We have a goalie goal in the organization. The first goalie goal in the organization.
I haven't had a chance to, you know, obviously Jesper is in Tahoe. I was going to shoot him a text today just to get some reaction. Because I wonder if he immediately knew, because for anyone who hasn't seen it, you can find it on the social channels for the Tahoe Night Monsters. He makes a save. It's on a... I think the net was empty. I don't know if it was. I think they probably pulled their goaltender at that point. I don't think it was a delayed call. But he makes a save, and then on the rebound, player goes to pass it back to the point, misses the defense, but goes all the way down into the empty net, and that's how he gets his goalie goal. So I don't know if he knew immediately, hey, that's mine, or if it took until the announcement. But it was not your traditional high arcing release. Here we have it on for our streaming audience. That is the first goalie goal for the Tahoe Night Monsters.
Just sneaks inside the left post.
A snipe.
I don't know what was happening, where that puck was supposed to go.
I mean, it's a bank pass off the wall, so I figure for the guy behind the net, you just throw it up to that point. Yeah. Someone should be there, but...
I think Jesper knew right away.
You think he knew right away?
Yeah.
Should I text him right now on the air?
Yes.
He won't answer. That'd be embarrassing for me.
Let's do it.
All right, I'll throw him a note. If he gets back to us by the end of the show, we'll get you a live reaction.
Makes the save. So that's how the first goalie goal happened in the National Hockey League. And I believe it was Billy Smith that made the save. And the puck got sent down into an empty net. It wasn't what we are used to now, where the goaltender grabs it and shoots it. Aiden Hill went for one the other night.
Yeah.
And I got a penalty for playing the puck outside the trapezoid. I don't know how they saw that. Like, it was so close. It was right in the line. And Aiden was a good sport about it, but he tried to go for one. The Hextall, the Osgood, the different guys that have been able to score over the years.
Goalie goals are still rare, of course. Gustafson got one earlier this year, but
there's never been two in the same year in the National Hockey League. Do you know that?
They are. I didn't know that, but I believe it. Mm-hmm. They're getting more common. They're not common, but they're getting more common, or at least there are more goaltenders now that have such a wider skill set that are more willing to try for it. Like Igor Shesterkin still doesn't have one, but it seems like he tries six times a year and he just hasn't gotten a lane yet. Do you think there's going to be a time someday where they become more common in the sense that we don't talk about it all week?
No.
Like we have field goal kickers. Kicking a 50-yarder used to be noteworthy, and now they're kicking 60-yarders, and we're like, well, they've all got legs now. I wonder if we're going to reach a point now where there'll be like a goalie
they're
goal.
They're not spending their day getting Slurpees.
Well,
anymore.
I'm just saying, will there be a time 20 years from now where we'll have a goalie goal a month and we'll be like, hey, that worked out. Like, I wonder if we'll reach a point where it'll be less sensationalized now that we have so many more willing to try. I feel like the pool of people willing to shoot for it has grown.
Well, the pool of people with the ability to flip the puck over people.
Has grown.
Linus Ullmark, the goal that he put in the net a couple of years ago, like that thing was ducking the scoreboard. The unbelievable ability to do that. So the more guys have the ability to do it, but I just don't think the opportunity presents itself. And I don't know how many coaches really like it either.
I could see it becoming more common because of, again, you used to have two kickers in the league who had a shot from 60. Now everyone probably can do it. It's a matter of whether you're willing to try it or not. There's still a risk to it, but everyone is capable, at least in warm-ups, of that distance. Now you're going to have, soon, every goaltender is at the very least capable of flipping it that far. And now it's far, far more common that you have teams pulling the net down, pulling the goaltender down too. So you're also going to have more situations where a goaltender is going to have a two-goal lead with an empty net that if he flubs it, he's got a little bit of wiggle room that he can at least shrug it off and not have the risk of blowing a game.
I think teams are so aware of it with their net empty.
There's always a guy floating at the far blue line.
Well, or they're not throwing it in on net.
Yeah.
And like the Gustafson one, they put it right on him. That was
you're asking for it.
That wasn't as much Gustafson converting on it. It was the poor play. I can't even remember who it was against. Was it Pittsburgh? But that I think teams are very much aware of the opposition goaltender's skill set and are able to keep it away from the netminder. Like Shesterkin, everybody in the building knows he's going to go for one when they're up by two.
Yeah.
Just the reality. Did he get back to you?
He did. Yeah, Jesper Vikman said he didn't really think about it until everyone came celebrating towards him. That's when he realized that it was his.
Really?
Yeah. I'm just raising the heat of battle. He makes a save and the puck works around the boards. It doesn't shock me entirely.
I think he knew.
He's so focused on the task at hand.
You're right. You're right. But he did. Like, it was an obvious save, and then it went to the opposition and ended up in the net.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right. He's just trying to
Could
hold
be very
on
modest.
For the win.
He's a modest guy.
Yes. Just like you. And you're modest, thinking that he wouldn't get back to you during the course of the show.
I just didn't want to put that kind of pressure on him.
I thought the pressure was on you.
Well, the pressure is on me, but if he's the show and his phone isn't nearby, then he lets me down. I don't want to put that on him either.
I was thinking
there's a lot at stake here, a lot of reputations hanging in the balance.
It from your point of view, like, you didn't want to put yourself out there in case he didn't get back to you, and you're sitting there going, geez.
That was chiefly it, absolutely. I'm very, he got back in 5 minutes. He and I are closer than I thought.
For those who are watching on the stream, you can scan this code to sign up for LMK VGK text service, and you'll have a chance to win a signed Jack Eichel Golden Knights jersey. You'll also receive the latest updates sent directly to your phone, LMK. Text that right now, LMK VGK, for the text service. So we'll be back with more on Nighttime at Noon on Fox Sports Las Vegas and all of the VGK social media channels.
We're back to Nighttime at Noon on your home for the Vegas Golden Knights, Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Ever wanted to own a piece of Golden Knights history? VGK Authentics is the official channel for game-used items coming off the ice, from game-used pucks to game-worn jerseys and everything in between. Owning something from your favorite Golden Knights player has never been so easy. Shop VGK Authentics on VegasTeamStore.com, at the Arsenal, at City National Arena, and at the VGK Authentics kiosk behind Section 10 at T-Mobile Arena during games. Darren Millard, along with Brian McCormick, a couple of things I should mention. Frank Vetrano signed a 3-year, $18 million extension with the Anaheim Ducks. Significant because he deferred a bunch of salary.
Yeah.
And so he'll make $900,000 for a bunch of years after he's retired.
It's kind of like Shohei Ohtani showing the way.
Very popular in baseball right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to say why he would do that is, one, it's a great retirement plan. Number two is he will save California taxes because he doesn't plan on living in California when he's done. Alexander Ovechkin has scored four of his last five games since returning from the broken leg, and he continues the great chase. And the Vegas Golden Knights will take on the San Jose Sharks tomorrow, who have won their last two against Tampa Bay and New Jersey. Not middle squares on the bingo card. So San Jose has beaten a couple of legitimate teams.
Which also just shows, and Bruce Cassidy talked about it a little bit in his availability, it's a team that's still in the midst of their rebuild, but their young pieces are dynamic young pieces. Macklin Celebrini's having nearly a point per game season. Will Smith is starting to come along and find it.
They have the Hobie Baker line there.
As you mentioned, so they've won back-to-back. Before that, they lost 8 in a row. And 11 of 12. So it was a really, really rough December, but it's a team that if you're not ready and the budding superstars are aligned on that night and you fall behind, you can find yourself in some trouble. So it's a game that you need to start on time.
How good has Celebrini been?
Really, really?
Okay.
Ask me.
I ask you that. I ask you that as a way to set you up.
Well, he's been dynamic, and
no, you don't have to do any more.
Well, you know what?
Because he could have, he's still eligible for under 20, the World Junior Hockey Championship.
Yeah.
Connor Bedard could have still played in the World Junior Hockey Championship.
Are you explaining Canada's loss
yes.
to me? Is that what
that's,
you're
that's
are you
what
just
I'm trying to do?
The train
that's,
tracks.
That's no. Congratulations to Team USA, David Carl, and the coaching staff.
That's good.
First time ever that Team USA, USA Hockey. Wins consecutive World Junior Hockey Championship gold medals.
Yeah, and the overtime winner from Teddy Stiga, his first goal of the tour. That'll be a fun...
Started as the 13th forward.
That's going to be a really fun trivia question in a handful of years when when our memory of the tournament is a little blurrier. But, I mean, the headman pass from Ziv Bouyum to send Stiga in on the breakaway. Bouyum had a great tournament. It was a really... fun tournament for the U.S. and a lot of their big names, your Perreaux, Hagens is right now looks like he could be the top overall pick in the coming draft. He had a starring role. And David Carl, boy, is anyone's stock higher coaching-wise outside of the pro ranks than his right now? What he's done at Denver, what he's done for Team USA, he just wins everywhere.
So last year after the World Championship win at the under 20, Carl was hot.
Yeah.
And teams were looking at him, teams were vying to interview him, and he went back and committed to Denver University. Now he wins again. And I had a conversation with John Shannon this morning on 100% Hockey Podcast. Do we think Carl's in the National Hockey League next year? Or does he stay put? David Quinn, remember, had a great setup at Boston University. He went to the New York Rangers and then San Jose Sharks. He's still in the National Hockey League, assistant coach with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but he had that job for life at Boston University. And it's what you want to do. Not the National Hockey League's not for everybody, but I wonder if there's any, I could have stayed, I could have had this program. I wonder if Carl thinks the same thing, looks at the Quinn route and doesn't want to go down that path.
Do you also wonder... Because, again, he would get NHL interviews, and he would have a chance for that. I wonder if that's the best path as well, though, because that would be his first NHL job where he comes from, again, winning at Denver, winning with USA Hockey, his brand being so spotless.
Yeah, won a national championship
last year
as well. Yeah.
All he's done is win for the last 2 years. If his first NHL job, it's probably, if it's a team hiring a coach, it's probably not a team that's ready to make a cup run right then and there. Do you jump right into that and what may come with it, or is it good to go to the AHL and go through a more traditional stepladder development? I'm curious. I don't know what the right answer
is. If you're leaving DU...
You're going straight.
You're going straight, and you're cashing in.
Yeah.
You're getting some dollars. With all due respect to working your way up.
I'm just curious if you can... Like you said, David Quinn made that jump, and it wasn't the right landing spot, unfortunately, and you know, compared to what he had at BU, and again, still has... a great coaching career, but it was a tough transition from that BU job to the NHL job. I wonder if there's, if baby steps can be a more prudent decision. I don't know the answer.
And while Carl was away winning a second straight gold medal at the under 20 World Championship, his team, fifth-ranked team in the nation, Division I college, fell to UNLV from the ACHA. So,
which is an all-time win for UNLV, but also gives Carl the opportunity to say, you see what happens when I go away for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. And the UNLV kids, this is something that we got last week. They watched the Canada-Latvia game the night before their game against Denver, and Latvia upset Canada for the first time ever at the World Junior Hockey Championship. And they looked around and went, why not us?
Yeah.
And then they went out and beat Denver. So Canada's a very giving nation.
Yeah. Speaking of, what did you think about Canada and the World Juniors? Obviously not the outcome they've wanted for 2 years now. There were some discussions about some of the guys that were not put on that roster at the start of the tournament. Do you think it is a bump in the road for Canada, or is the world catching up a little bit?
Oh, I think the U.S. is the best nation now, solidly. It's not just it could go either way. The U.S., by winning back-to-back, United States and USA hockey is the best at the under-20 level, and we'll see what happens at the Four Nations face-off. Where Canada went wrong, they were a young team. They've won with young teams before. They were so undisciplined.
Yeah.
I like Dave Cameron. I know Dave Cameron. I find fault in the fact that he never got ahead of that early in the tournament by taking away people's ice time and putting the law down. It was always, these players know what's at stake. They have to work with the officials. They have to rein it in. It was never, it's enough. Mm-hmm. And they didn't lose the team because they left a couple of guys off the roster, or didn't lose the tournament because they left a couple of guys off the roster. They fell short because they couldn't stay out of the penalty box.
Tell you one more thing I came away from the World Juniors with, just growing what has been a sense for a little while now. Mm-hmm. You look at that U.S. roster, Carl, recent representation in the high rounds of the NHL draft.
Trevor Connolly, too.
It's a really good time for college hockey right now. College hockey brand is pretty strong because they're producing a lot of high-end players, and there are a lot of high-end players choosing college.
It might be the high point of college hockey. Mm. I say that in a sense of, we don't know what this whole adjustment with major junior in Canada and eligibility and NIL and where that's going to go moving forward. But you're right. The brand has never been
Providence better. College, Trevor Connolly, gold medalist.
BGK, first round draft choice. Thanks to Brian McCormick and our entire team. Like, we have 50 people in here.
I know. Holding up all the signs of all the things we say
to this program. It's unbelievable that we can make a mess of it like we do, because there's so many working around the clock to make this a smashing success. We'll talk to you in a couple hours on the BGK Insider.